Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show, episode number 89 with Damian Lupo on solo 401k plans. Dan Breslin here, your REI Diamond Show host. And today's episode is one I've been excited about for weeks now. Do you have an IRA plan that you'd like to use to invest in real estate? Or maybe you already have a self-directed IRA and you've been using them to invest in real estate? I do myself. My dad has his in self-directed IRAs, and many of my private lenders who fund my deals and even buyers are using self-directed IRAs. Now, imagine having a checkbook control over those IRA funds. Imagine having no slowdown for paperwork processing from the usual route of self-directed IRA custodians. A lot easier, right? Find a deal, write the check, and go to closing. Almost sounds too good to be true, right? That's why I've been excited to get Damian on the show today. His company specializes in setting up solo 401k plans and solo Roth plans, which do exactly that, allow you to have checkbook control of your funds in your IRA plan with only a single low yearly fee and no transaction fees. So if you've ever done deals with some of the self-directed IRA custodians, you know that there could be a long time getting the paperwork put together, agreements of sale signed, mortgage documents, notes, funding, all this stuff takes time, and it usually comes with a processing fee attached as well. So to all of my private lenders who are currently invested in or have invested in my deals, I am sorry for having you set up the self-directed plans. These solo plans are so much faster and efficient. They do not eat into your gains with the same level of fees like the IRA plans that I know I personally have. So I guess basically there's no better time than right now to get back on track though, right? So Damian has also built and sold more than 35 businesses over the past 25 years. He's written 5 books and even built a $20 million real estate portfolio. But I'll let you tell him about that. So let's get started. All right. Welcome to the REI Diamond Show. Damian, it's good to have you here.
Dan, it's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I was excited to get this episode. I did some background on you, as I'm probably already talked about in the introduction there for the listener's sake. Maybe for everybody listening who doesn't know who you are, Damian, you could just talk about sort of, you know, the early days, what you did to get into real estate, you know, what your real estate career looked like, and then maybe how that led to and what your business is comprised of and looks like today.
Yeah, absolutely. So I started off like a lot of people. I read a book, one of those books like A Rich Dad, Poor Dad book, and then saw an infomercial and I thought I can be the next Robert Allen or whoever is on television these days. And so I did. I watched an infomercial and ended up going out to Orlando, went to a seminar, basically bought all the products, and a buddy of mine found a deal and said, hey, I got this deal. Do you want to be my partner? And I said, yeah, I'd love to be your partner. What do I have to do? And he said, you have to put up the money. And then I said, okay, how much? He said, $6,000. And I said, well, I don't really have $6,000, but I have a credit card. So I took out a cash advance on my credit card and bought this house. And then I said, cool, I'm a real estate investor. And it was funny because at the time, my business, my day job was selling insurance. I was selling auto and homeowners policies, had an insurance agency. And they basically looked at me and said, you got to choose. You cannot be an insurance agent and a real estate investor. And I said, yeah, but like all the money seems to be in real estate and that's where I can write my own ticket. And I said, all right, you know what? See ya. And I cut out of there and I just jumped off the cliff and learned how to fly on the way down, which I don't necessarily recommend because it is crazy and terrifying. And I almost went bankrupt the first 6 months because I was having fun learning how to paint and do electrical and electrocuting myself and falling off roofs and all this stuff. And then I realized, wow, you know what? If I keep going down this path and I don't do what they told me to do at the seminar, I'm going to run out of money and be bankrupt in 30 days. And when that happened, when I realized that, I actually started measuring what I was making, was spending. And really the making part was easy. It was zero. And the expending part was like everything I had. And I went out and took massive action on the things I was told to do. And in 30 days, I bought 8 more houses. and realized, wow, you know what? I can buy these things, and I sold them on contract. So people were making payments to me as the bank. And at that point, I realized this was something I could do over and over again. And then I went crazy. And over the next few years, bought 150 houses. And then the story just gets crazier and crazier until I went off a cliff and realized I didn't have a sustainable model with a $20 million portfolio that blew up in front of me.
I'm guessing that was the year 2008, 2009, in that era, right?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because when people have these blow-up stories over the last 15 years, it typically is 2008. It's the moment where the things shook or the market shook. And those of us that didn't have a sustainable model in up and down got wiped out. And it was a lot of people because they were riding that tide, which is really relevant for today's investors, people that are going out there and doing things. Because if you're speculating today, let me tell you something. This is a lot like 2007 and 2006. And it was in those years where I thought I was super smart because I had just sold a bunch of houses in 2005. I got rid of a lot of my portfolio, had a lot of cash, and everything seemed to be going up. And I thought, well, shoot, if I could do it with a bunch of houses, I can certainly do it with condo complexes and apartment buildings. And I doubled down, and I really started speculating like I see a lot of people doing now, because all they're seeing is green shoots. They're seeing blue skies, but they don't realize that this is cyclical. And if you don't have a strong foundation, you're going to get absolutely pummeled when the market corrects. And we're going to have a correction. And when that happens, you can get rich or you can get dead.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And I look at my own investing. I'm buying 6 rental properties this afternoon as soon as we're done with the show here. I literally have to sign the HUDs and send them back over. I am buying in neighborhoods where I believe that the prices still have the opportunity to perhaps double or close to that over the course of the next, 7 to 10 years, if everything goes my way. And I have to question myself, too. I look in the mirror, Damien, sometimes, and I'm like, am I speculating? Am I doing what I witnessed everybody doing, including myself, in 2006, 2007, when I first got into business? Or is this a sound investment philosophy? And so far that I can tell, it's a sound investment philosophy. I'm buying in areas where the neighborhoods are starting to gentrify, and I'm buying the properties where there's still, you know, drug activity and things of that nature going on. And I really love buying property in those opportunity and these like very micro market emerging markets that I find, like in cities like Philadelphia and Atlanta, where I've like just come to see what, you know, the political climate and the business climate and the population growth and the demographic growth seems to be in my favor, where these properties still have the opportunity. We're talking, I'm buying them for $60,000 to $70,000 each, you know, cash sale prices. They're probably worth $150,000. And a few blocks away, the houses are going for $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, and there's things that are going on in the neighborhood to help push it. So, you know, while the entire market could go up and I could take a bath somewhat by being on the edge of that stuff, I feel like I have somewhat of a hedge. And either way, the properties make sense as rental properties. It's kind of like my savings account. So, you know, I hope it's not the other thing that you're talking about. It's funny because it's like the devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other. And that's kind of the feeling that I have a little bit with, you know, my own rental portfolio growth in the last 2 years or so as I've gone on that path.
Dan, you mentioned something that's really, really important, and I think people should pause for a second, maybe even pause the show and think about it, maybe take a note. You talked about the Wayne Gretzky move. You talked about going to where the puck is going to be. You're talking about buying into something that makes sense now, and you see where it's going. So the difference is, a lot of people are saying, hey, this property has gone up by 30-40%, and it's going to keep going up by 30-40%, and they can't really tell you why. They just think, oh, it's done it, so it's going to keep doing it. And you're seeing the big trends and where things are going in those niche markets. So it's a very different thing. I don't see what you're doing as the same thing that I did when I blew up my life. But I do see a lot of people doing that. And so I think that people should pay attention to what you just said and really think about implementing that stuff into their investing, because it's probably fairly sustainable. And the foundation is built so that when the markets do correct, you're not going to have to give properties back. You're going to be able to ride that thing and then continue to make money the whole way through with your rentals.
Absolutely. I also like to keep like 50% debt or less on the properties, and that's based on my purchase price, not like loan to value, and get my appraiser to like use the comp up the block for 300.
Yeah. That's a good point. I like that. That's a big trick that people play on themselves by saying, oh, it's really worth this and I'm buying it for 50%. But if you're literally at a 50% level based on your purchase, that's a totally different game, and you're playing it very, very smart.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So 2008, 2009, 2010, et cetera, happened. I went through that kind of personal hell, and I'm sure a lot of people listening have gone through that hell or can do their best to try to imagine that if they got into the business after 2011 or so. So how did you recover from that? What do you do differently today? And I assume you're not obviously working the same business model that you were in 2008, 9, 10. So can we talk about the progression and the evolution for you, Damien?
Yeah, Dan, one of the things that I did was, it's a natural thing that anybody going through a meltdown would do. I basically hid from it, ignored it, and put my thumb in my mouth and curled up into the fetal position for a couple of years. I mean, this is what happens when you get obliterated, which is why it's so dangerous to not have a foundation, because when you get obliterated, you tend to be out of the game. And the worst part about being out of the game when there's a meltdown is you're missing all the opportunities. And so for several years, I didn't even want to look at real estate or talk about it. It just hurt too much. And so I had to take a time out. I was literally in the timeout box and just kind of hanging. And really, my progression to get back to a place where I'm interested in real estate, doing real estate again, I had to ask what the truth was and figure out what the problem was. And then the only way that I could move forward was to make sure that the problem was me and then fix me. So I figured that out. I worked on that for a number of years. And the big key with that is not doing it by ourselves. Whenever we have a question like that, it's getting help from other people. And this is coaches, mentors, therapists, probably not your spouse, probably not your best friend, because they just love you and they're not going to tell you the truth. I mean, you think they're telling you the truth, but they're really not. They just want to tell you what's going to make you feel better most of the time. So I spent a number of years rewiring and getting to the point where I was ready to go out there and be smarter and not be so lackadaisical or just kind of flippant in the activities. And when I did that, I started asking the question, what can I do that would really engage me at a high level and create a lot of impact for a lot of people, with a side effect being wealth? Because if you just go focus on making a bunch of money and there's no real why or there's no real foundational value system or something, you're going to end up dealing drugs. I mean, you have to have more than just cash, because, I mean, the best place to make cash is probably, you know, throwing crack cocaine. And it's just, you got to have something bigger than that, more important, more impactful. So it led me to what I'm doing now, which is giving people control of their retirement money, which is so important, because that tends to be where people's cash is sitting. It's stuck in these 401ks and IRAs. And if people had access to that, they could start doing things like investing in real estate. So that's what my entire focus is now. It's tied back to real estate, but it's giving a lot more people a lot more options by educating them. So I'm really just a teacher at this point, and giving people the power to control their destiny instead of hoping it all works out, smoking opium, and then getting blown over by Wall Street.
I love the drug analogies. That's so funny. Smoking opium. Interesting. So, okay, we have you now teaching people how to better control, access their retirement money. Before we dive into a litany of questioning I have, and I'm sure a litany of experience that you're about to share on controlling the retirement money, just to give everyone a frame of reference, are you still investing in real estate in today's market or over the past couple of years at all? Or have you said, you know what, my hands are completely washed of that. Let me just focus on this other business that I'm doing now.
The way I do it right now, I'm a lender. So I partner with people on their deals and I lend money. So I do private hard money lending. So I'm basically the bank. That gives me a lot of options. I'm happy to do that. That's my narrow focus, which I think is important, so that we're not all over the place. And then eventually I'll end up acquiring more assets. But I'm happy to be the lender right now and be the money side.
That's important to know. So for anyone listening who doesn't connect the dots connecting are a lender like Damien is doing right now is, I'm going to make these assumptions and you can agree or tell me that I'm off base, but you're comping deals in one market or multiple markets on a continuous basis as you're doing some form of underwriting with those loans. Am I kind of correct? So you're analyzing and watching the market very close, the same way that I am as a, you know, buy, fix, and sell investor, as a landlord, and as a wholesaler in five different markets. You're also very intently watching the real estate market, right, Damien?
Yeah, Dan, there's something that's really important about the way that I look at these things, and I think everybody should take a piece of this and run with it. It's something kind of similar to how Marcus Lemonis from The Profit looks at things with people, process, products. I look at my deals first at the person I'm working with, because I'm looking at somebody. I want to do 10 or 20 deals over the next 5, 10, 20 years with somebody. So I'm looking at a person. Do I want to work with this person? Great deal, bad person, I'm out. And then the second thing is the market. Do I want to be investing in Detroit? I mean, I don't personally, there's a lot of opportunity, but I don't want to be there. So I'm not going to look at deals there. And then it's going to be the actual deal. So I don't care if the deal is amazing. I want to make sure the people are and the market is good. And I want to be there. Like somebody came in and they pitched me on a strip club the other day. And I went, I'm not in strip clubs. I don't care. It's not something I do. I just don't do those deals. And the cash flow on that is kind of like the cocaine business. It's crazy cash, but it's not something that I'm interested in. So I stay away from those things. So there is a process, people, market, and then the deals.
Nice. And which markets are you in right now throughout the country so everyone knows where you're coming from and what your base of experience is currently on what you're looking at?
The places that I'm doing deals primarily Arizona, Colorado, Chicago, and some of the New England areas, and then a little bit in Florida.
Were there any reasons you could share as to why you picked those, or maybe even give your favorite in order of like 1, 2, 3, here's the three I'd prefer or the most abundant activity in and why?
You know, it's funny, Dan, that the number 1, 2, and 3 answers are all the same. It was the name of the people that were involved. It was the people that I became close to, I trusted, and they convinced me of why the particular market was good. And then they went out and hunted deals. So because I believed in them and wanted to have that relationship and do business together, I was willing to go into markets. And so they kind of convinced me to go. I didn't say I want to find somebody in Chicago. I literally was trusting in the person that came to me, and they proved that I should be investing with them. And so at that point, I was willing to go where they wanted to go.
Cool. Starts with the people first. You definitely cannot expand and grow business. You got to have good people. There's a lot of the e-myth. So the e-myth is about making systems so simple that anyone who is like barely educated at least can read or follow some semblance of instructions, could do all the various tasks throughout a business, and then you're able to franchise and grow. I'm sure a lot of listeners, maybe yourself, have even read and subscribed to a portion of that philosophy, just like I do. However, you know, I think that there is definitely something to be said for allowing enough space outside of a system, you know, described by Michael Gerber in the E-Myth, for good people or even great people, you know, way above average people, to then put their own intuition, their own thought, and develop some of their own processes sort of within, you know, the framework of, I'd prefer like a little more of a loose system rather than something so rigid that it has to be done this time every way, because, you know, this is real estate. There's so many moving pieces and so many little niches in a market that, you know, the smart mind and smart person, you know, that above average person can almost identify and create opportunities where everybody else sees, you know, a lack thereof.
And that flexibility leads to a story, a thing that happened to me. And I think it's really important for people to be able to adapt to opportunities and not be so rigid. And the thing that happened, this is actually 6 months into my start, where it was my third house that I bought. And I had it on the market. I was selling it on a lease option. And I had it for $2,000 down. That was what I was asking. And this guy contacted me and he said, hey, I'm interested in your house, but I want to put more down. Can you adjust my payment? And I said, yeah, I mean, I can do that. So the answer to the lesson here is, be willing to say yes, and let's figure out how to do this together. And so I was thinking, my model is, I want to make $200 per house. That's my deal. I want to be able to do that on every house. And so I was willing to go down, you know, 10, 15 bucks. So I show up, I said, well, what are you thinking? He said, I was thinking 25. And I said, yeah, sure. No problem. I mean, it's not going to be a big deal on my cash flow. He showed up at the house and handed me a $25,000 check instead of a $2,500 check. And I went, I need to adapt really fast, because this guy just handed me the amount of money, that more money net than I made last year. In one moment, I'm about to change my psychology. And I said, yep, I need to adjust your documents a little bit more. So let me go do that. Took my mobile printer, printed out some new documents. And I was willing to basically wipe my cash flow. The 200 went away. I mean, I was basically broke even on that deal. And what that did, that 25,000 gave me a massive amount of powder in my keg to go out there and do a whole bunch more marketing and explode my business, because I was willing to say yes and adapt. If you don't do that, you miss opportunities like crazy.
That's cool, man. I really appreciate you sharing that. That is a classic story. And I love those kind of things too, especially early on. It's like a gift from God. Like, the universe just delivers you some fantastic circumstance, but you are the one, Damien, who is out there taking massive action to put yourself in position for those like lottery ticket type situations where you win big. And I cannot stress that more for anybody. You know, the reason that our company, we do 40, 50 deals per month, and the reason that we, you know, hit a few six-figure deals throughout the course of that is because we're doing so many. Like, we fish with a net. We pull up the minnows, we pull up the, you know, the tunas, and we pull up the grander, the 1,000-pound trophy marlins that go on the wall at the end of the day. Those are, like, to us, the six-figure deals. So, you know, taking massive actions, definitely, that was definitely key to getting into that opportunity, right?
Yeah, a lot of times people think that they can just sit behind their screen and do all their business. And there's a million seminars, there's a million books that say, here are the tools that you use, just sit behind your computer. The problem is, you're competing with 10 million other people doing the exact same thing. And so there's no real sifting out to the top. You've got to be willing to think a little different. And what you said a second ago, you've got to be willing to go out there and do something. Get off your butt and go out into the field and start cruising around and seeing things, most people won't get off their butt. They'll just sit there and they'll stare at a screen and say, I can click my way to wealth. You cannot click your way to wealth in real estate. You got to be out there doing stuff. I'm convinced of this. And so I would say if you want to do one thing today, get off your butt and stop looking at your computer.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cool. Let's switch gears here. I do want to get into the retirement money control topic, which I know you're an expert just because I've done the background research on you before you came on the show. So do you kind of want to give us the background of the big revelation that most real estate investors, maybe who have a retirement plan of some kind, like what's the big idea? What's the one system we can kind of all start working and we should all be excited about?
Well, what we should be all excited about is that you literally being exposed to an unlimited pool of cash to fund every deal you can ever do for the rest of your life. And here's what that means. You've either got retirement money in an IRA or a 401k that's sitting there that you're not using for your real estate deals, or your cousin, family, neighbors, whatever, has a big pile of money that they would like to get out of Wall Street. They'd like to get out of mutual funds, out of their life insurance. They want to do something safe and secure. And you can literally say, hey, I've got an option for you. You can be my lender. Your retirement account can lend money on my deals, and you can get a fixed 10, 12, 14%, whatever it is, on your money. And people are really happy about doing this because nobody likes Wall Street except for Wall Street. They love that system because it makes them money, but it screws everybody else. And you can become the solution. And with you're going to be everybody's hero. So really what we're talking about is taking money out of the IRAs and 401ks, putting it in your hands, no taxes, no penalties, and none of that, and being able to invest in deals or having people invest in your deals using that money that's trapped inside that Wall Street roller coaster.
Okay, so give us an example of how to access that. I have an uncle and he's got $180,000 in an IRA from whatever company he was working for a few years back that he left, and now he works at a new place and he's got this IRA account with that $180,000. I have an opportunity on the table to buy a property for 75 grand. Let's just say put 75 grand in it. So I'm going to borrow 150,000 from him. Does he have to describe the process for me to get that ball rolling for him?
So the ball is basically going to be set up such that he's going to say, I want to be able to loan my money out to my friend Dan, and I need to set my plan up. How do I do that? And so we're going to set up his solo 401k to where his money is going to be rolled over from his current wherever it's at, it's going to be rolled over into a checking account that he's going to be able to sign on. And when you find a deal and you pitch that deal to him, he's going to write you or the escrow company or the attorney a check for $150,000. It's going to roll into it. And now he's invested with you. He has become your lender. He has become your banker. And you're going to be paying his retirement account back with payments or however you structure it. And he's going to sit there and he's actually going to experience mailbox money. I mean, that's really what happens once you set these things up.
So the mailbox money comes back and is the solo 401k. So a lot of the self-directed IRAs I borrowed from, and I know that a lot of my listeners have set up and family members have set up, for me, it's a lot of paperwork. We're sending stuff off to the custodian. They're sending the paperwork back. My dad has an IRA. He can't sign off on the docs. They have to be emailed to the custodian and back. And in all honesty, Damien, for all that effort, I just wire the money from my own account. It's not even like a big deal. I'd rather just forget about it. It's too much aggravation. Is this a lot less intense? And can you describe, is there a custodian or is the uncle basically with the checkbook and he is kind of the custodian doing the paperwork and stuff?
That's the right question right there. This is the opposite of the self-directed IRA world. That world has custodians. It has all of the pain of going through somebody that's overseeing you. It's like having Big Brother in every deal you do. You just get worn out and you don't want to do it. And you can't be very fast because custodians are not fast. When your solo 401k is set up, you are the custodian, the trustee, the administrator. You're the only one in the deal. So if you want to do a deal, you want to lend to somebody or you want to go buy a piece of property with your retirement money, you are literally going to write a check. You better do a good deal vetting the deal and make sure you know who you're in business with. But the deal is you are in charge. And so there's none of that friction with the custodians that are involved in self-directed IRAs. If you can avoid those things, you want to avoid them. Here's the other thing that most people don't realize, Dan, this is huge. I mean, this can cost you a small fortune or a big fortune. If you're doing investing with self-directed IRAs and you're doing real estate deals and you use your money in your retirement account and then you get a loan to cover part of your deal, you're actually going to get taxed up to 40% on your gains that are basically attributed to the debt portion. So Like if you have 80% debt on a deal and your IRA kicks in 20%, like you're 20% down, 80% of your profits are going to be taxed at almost 40% today, not when you retire, but like right now. And that doesn't happen in the solo 401k. It doesn't, it's not, it's called unrelated debt finance income. Here's the important part. If you don't want to pay taxes, don't use a self-directed IRA. Use a solo 401k. It's night and day. You never want to do it if you can help it.
Okay, my mind is blown. I am curious to wonder why the custodian side exists and is even still out there. This sounds so much better. Are there other risks or reasons why a solo 401k would be frowned upon by certain people or would not be the right vehicle to hold the retirement account in, and someone should rather go the custodian route like I've been doing all these years?
Well, the reason that most people haven't even heard of it and they've heard about the custodians is the same reason people haven't even heard about self-directed stuff in the first place and they have their money stuck in the stock market. They're pitched and told and hammered on by the system that this is what you're supposed to do. Why? Because the system makes a lot of money doing it. The custodians make fees for everything that they do. And when you set up, when you say, okay, I don't want to do that, I want to do the solo 401k, most people aren't going to tell you about it. So our business model is very different. We charge you to set it up. You invest a couple $1,000 to set it up, and it's a flat $300 a year. That's very different than a self-directed IRA where you're paying for wire fees and you're paying for transaction fees and you're paying for them to smile at you and send you a letter every year saying, hey, how's it going here? Just fill out this form. It's $100. None of those things exist, but that business model is really good for them because it maintains a lot of consistent cash flow. So why would somebody tell you something where they're only going to make a few $100 a year? They don't like the model because it doesn't make them rich. That's why you haven't heard of it. I mean, there's a reason. You just have to follow the money. And we haven't even talked about the Roth portion of this thing yet, which is really going to blow your mind. But right now, you should just be realizing that there's a reason that you've been stuck in the self-directed IRAs. It's because those things make the custodians a lot of money, and they don't necessarily make you the money that you should be making.
Okay. So what about filing tax returns? Are these something you have to file a tax return on? Is there additional risk from the IRS taking, you know, a closer look at solo 401ks or anything like that?
No. In fact, if you have less than $250,000 in the plan, you're not required to file anything. If you don't have any employees and you're investing in real estate, there is no requirement. Once you get over $250,000, you file a 5500 form, and people's accountants can do it. It's a very simple form. Basically just says, here's what I have in the account. The balance is worth this. And if you've got real estate, you're getting a BPO, a broker price opinion on your properties, so that the IRS says, okay, you've got $800,000 in assets in this account. And it's really, that's it. I mean, there's, as long as you can balance a checkbook and you're not doing something that's disallowed, you're not going to have a problem with an audit or anything. And what I'm talking about with disallowed, it's the same thing that you do with an IRA. You can't invest in a house you're going to like vacation in today. You can't use the stuff for yourself. But basically anything you were doing in an IRA, you're able to do with your solo 401k plus a lot more. I mean, it's 10 times better than the self-directed IRA. And once you really dig into it, you'll get it and you'll never want to go back. In fact, you'll be pissed that you didn't go and do this 10 years ago. That's most people's situation.
I am. So so the solo 401k, can I think of that similar to like the same way I would think of my LLCs? Right? The LLC is sort of an entity that's created. It's sort of like a vehicle that can own property or can hold mortgage notes. It can buy and sell a contract on a property, you know, assign a contract on a property. Is the solo 1K similar to that? As in it's like an entity?
Yeah, you really do treat your solo 401k as its own business. And the business just has special rules and special ways of dealing with taxes or avoiding them altogether. I mean, there's a way to do real estate investing and not pay taxes ever again. I mean, that's when you have a solo 401k, you're acting, it's its own business. You go out and do deals and you use the Roth portion of it, which you get as part of it being set up. When you use that, you're never going to pay taxes as you build it, as you spend it. It's always going to be tax free. So all of a sudden you've kind of gotten to the point where you don't care what the tax rates are. I mean, this completely changes how you look at life. When you don't care what Congress is doing, it doesn't impact you anymore.
All right, let's touch on a 401k. Assume you got to be a certain age and you would pay taxes when you start taking distributions, or you have to. And can you briefly touch on, you know, the distribution and the actually like living off of the solo 401k at some point down the line when you retire? And then we can kind of switch gears and get right into the Roth portion.
Yeah. The solo 401k is really, it's got, you're running it based on the same rules. It's ERISA. It's the same rules as your 401k at your company or the 403b or 457. These are like, if you're an educator or you work at the government, basically it's the same rules. 59 and a half, you can start taking money out. Otherwise there's a penalty. And there's no real difference, except you can do a whole bunch more, because if it's stuck in a traditional 401k, as we know, it's you're basically limited to mutual funds. And that's what makes Wall Street all the money with all their fees. So when you switch over to the solo, at that point, you're able to invest in all sorts of things like the real estate, land, rentals. You can invest in land in Panama or Belize or startups. People are buying Bitcoin with it. They're buying precious metals that they can hold. And by the way, you can't do that in a self-directed IRA legally. It's totally illegal. And people are doing it. So custodians are setting people up for a lot of problems later. So you've got those options. That's basically what you're doing. You're getting options that you didn't have before.
Okay. So you take the money out when you're 59 and a half, and the solo 401k will be taxed the same way. Whatever income bracket you're paying taxes when you're 59 and a half, that's what you would be paying on your distributions at that point. Right, Damien?
That's right. Assuming that you're using the traditional method of deferred, where you're buying into the idea of not paying taxes now. And I have a different opinion. I think that we should be really thinking about using the Roth portion and saying, okay, I'm going to pay taxes today. That way I'm opting out of paying taxes ever again. So when I start pulling money out at 59 and a half, there is no tax event. I pull the money out tax-free. Doesn't matter how much I pull out. It could be $20 million a year. It's tax-free. That's why I like the Roth so much, because we don't know what the tax rates are going to be. And quite honestly, I don't want to plan to be poor. That's what Wall Street says. Hey, just do this deferred thing. And that way, when you're 59 and a half, you can pull your money out and you can pay a lower tax rate because you're going to make less income. That's the stupidest idea I've ever heard of. Why would you plan to be broke? That's dumb.
Yeah, it's nuts. All right. So talk about the Roth portion then. You pay taxes now. I don't know. You roll over a $300,000 IRA and you take a hit now and then grow that for the next 10, 15, 20 years. And it will be tax-free when you start taking the money out later.
Yeah, here's what I like to do. I like to look at things and say, okay, we've got, let's say it's $300,000 or $300. It doesn't really make any difference, because the power in real estate is that you've got the ability to leverage. You can turn $1,000 that, let's say you had $1,000, or let's say out of the $300,000 you're rolling over, you only convert $1,000 from regular to Roth. Okay, so you pay taxes on that money, whatever you turn into Roth money. Once you do that, that money gets to grow and be pulled out tax-free. So any big deal that you're going to do that's going to make you a lot of money, you just use your Roth money. So you might pay a little bit of money on your taxes up front, but you want that portion of your solo 401k to grow to be the biggest portion, because that way you're not paying taxes down the road. The Roth is the exact same as the other portion, the deferred portion, except that when you pull the money out, there's no taxes. And it gets better. If you're doing this and you set it up so there's money there when you die, somebody else inherits it. Let's say that's your kid or a grandchild or whoever. And that person is probably a lot younger than you. And if they are, they get to take that money and invest it and spend it at any point, and there's no tax. So let's say somebody's 25 years old and they actually are smart enough to invest and they inherit the Roth 401k from you, then there's $10 million in there. They're never going to pay taxes as long as they keep investing and spending that money. And they can spend it at age 25, no taxes. That's a massive way for people's families to stop paying taxes and being robbed by the government constantly.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you keep mentioning portion. Is this one account and I have $25,000 in the Roth portion and I have $175,000 in the solo 401k portion, or are they two separate, or can you have one or the other exclusively?
When we think about the solo 401k, we think about that as your business, and really the business can have different checking accounts, and that's effectively what you're going to have. You're going to have one account that's your Roth account and one account that's your deferred account. And so one account will be taxed when you're 59 and a half, and the Roth account is going to be never taxed. It just, the money that goes into it has already been paid. You've already paid taxes on it. So it's split up that way. It's inside your retirement plan, and then you just have two different checking accounts.
Do you need to have both?
Nope. You can have one or the other or both. It's really flexible. It really is. It depends on what you have. If you just want to have all Roth money, by all means. To me, I don't know why you'd want to not have all Roth money. Some people just feel they don't want to pay taxes. They think they can just eventually not pay them if they have money in a deferred account. But you're forced to pay taxes, and that's one of the problems. With a deferred account, there are limits. And so when you hit a certain age, if you have money in a 401k or an IRA and it's deferred money, the government forces you to start taking distributions. And they do that because they don't want you to defer taxes forever. They want you to start paying them. In the Roth, you've got a lot more flexibility because you've already paid the taxes. The government's not going to have a windfall. So there's not a big pressure for you to go out there and take the money.
Okay, so what's the process? We have somebody who's listening who has the IRA from, you know, the old job, and they're like, you know what, this sounds like a good idea. I want to invest in Dan's deal. So, like, what's step one for my uncle that we used as the example who had the 300 grand earlier? What would be his literal next step as, you know, as soon as he pulls over, if he's driving and listening to this episode, what would he go do to get the ball rolling from his old dormant IRA that's sitting from the old job?
It's a two-step process. One, somebody's going to reach out and they're going to say, hey, I'm interested. They're going to get a copy of the book that I wrote on this, and they're going to set up a consultation so that they can have a conversation with one of us, with me, to make sure this is a good fit. And assuming it is, then we would start the ball, and literally within 5 days, they're going to have their checkbook and they'd be able to roll the money over into that checkbook. So it's a streamlined process. The first thing is to make sure that that it makes sense for them. And once it does, then at that point, we get the ball rolling, and then they get the money in their hands to be able to invest with you.
So they're going to, what, fill out the rollover paperwork from their old IRA? And like, what's the fastest and what's the average timelines if somebody, you know, started the process this afternoon? Are we talking 5 days they literally have the money rolled over from the other account? Or have you seen it like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you know, from the bureaucracy of the other IRA companies just getting the money together and wired into the new account? Can you just give people an idea of the timeline on this?
Yeah, you bring something up, a really good point, and that is that the institutions never want to let go of your money. They want to keep your money trapped because they feel like it's, let's be honest, it's their asset. They're making money off of it every year. So they're going to push back. I've seen it happen where we get everything set up and you're ready to go literally in 48 hours. That's a typical turnaround. We guarantee it in 5 days, but typically it's less than 48 hours. You've got your stuff set up. You go set up your bank account and you contact whoever it is, TD Ameritrade or whoever, and say, I want to have this rolled over. They say, here's the form. And typically they'll send the money via wire or a check within about 2 weeks. They are not really helpful in many cases. They want to try to push this out and make you so frustrated you give up and the money stays trapped. So just setting people up, I'm sure a lot of the listeners have had this experience. And it gets frustrating, and they know that they'll wear you out. So a lot of them have systems set up. It's kind of like insurance reimbursement, where you file the claim and they deny it across the board immediately, and then they know that most people will not ask for an appeal. And oftentimes that's what happens with these institutions. So typically when you are persistent, it's 2 or 3 weeks. That's the most common thing that I've seen for people to get their money rolled over and be able to start investing.
Cool. Sounds good, Damien. Are there any other important things the listeners might want to know about, think about, et cetera, and questions that I maybe did not ask you about what we talked about concerning the solo 401k before we kind of switch gears here?
Yeah, I mean, there's one thing I just real quickly touched on it, but one of the things that people like, they like real assets if they're thinking about real estate. And the other real asset that a lot of the folks really want to be able to take advantage of is things like precious metals, because they don't trust the currency. And if you want to actually physically hold precious metals, I'm not talking about a gold ETF or some kind of fake gold. If you actually want to hold it, you're able to do that with your solo 401k. So you can invest and then take physical possession where you're holding that. It makes a lot of people really happy, and they feel a lot more secure if they can hold some of their assets in their hands, just like you can go touch the dirt and the wood from the buildings that you're buying. That's a big thing that is different, because you cannot do that with an IRA. So I think people need to really keep that in mind if that's important to them.
And the last question I have here, just to kind of shed a little light, since we used my uncle's example with the 300 grand, I think, all throughout the episode here, what would be the assets that I would be giving him, or that would be created, that his solo 401k would own if I borrowed it wasn't 300, it was 180 grand he had. So if I borrowed the $150,000 for him and I'm using that money in a property, what would be the assets that I created during that transaction that are owned by his solo 401k? Just so the listeners kind of get all the little pieces there.
Yeah, your uncle is going to have a mortgage. He's going to have a mortgage in his account. So he's got a security instrument. So if you decide to go move to Bermuda and abandon him, his plan can go take that property, and he's got the security. It's important, because you're in charge of being a good fiduciary, which means you need to be responsible for the assets. So you don't just lend people money and hope it all works out. You do have something that backs it up. And in this case, he'd have a mortgage just like a bank would get.
Yeah. So the mortgage and the note, and, you know, the owner of the solo 401k would, in certain cases, if the loan went bad, I guess the solo 401k would hire the attorney and start the foreclosure process, or, you know, you'd be making phone calls to kind of get that money back if something took place, right?
Exactly right.
All right, Damien, is there any idea, system, strategy that you might have implemented in this business or even in the real estate business over the last year or two and experienced like outsized growth or just great results or just a dramatic improvement in your business?
The thing that comes up immediately for me, the mistake I made was not implementing automation and not implementing other people with leverage. And so it seems simple, but I think it's the thing that people wait way too long on. They don't get somebody else to keep track of their numbers, and so they don't keep track of their numbers. They don't have somebody they can just punt things to, and there's lots of people out there that are freelancing. I mean, we're in a freelance economy, and there's plenty of people that want to do things on the side. They don't want to have the man that they have to work for. So you can hire all these people that are happy for those jobs and using some type of automation system so that you're not sitting there trying to chase everything. There's too many moving parts. So those two things are, to me, that's the leverage. That's a 10X factor. It's at least a person, and it's an automation system. So the same things that you're doing every day can be automated and you're not thinking about them.
And who is the most successful real estate investor, developer, business person, and why do you believe they're successful?
That's easy. My mentor and partner, Dan Hellman, he is the guy that I know that has done the most. And it comes down to three things. And this is something Warren Buffett said years ago. He said, I look for people that have three things, that they're smart, they're industrious, and they have integrity. And what I hope is that if they're missing the third thing, that they don't have the first two, because that's when they're dangerous. And Dan has more integrity than anybody I know. And he's super smart, and he's the hardest worker that I've ever known. And so him going out there and developing thousands of lots and building hundreds and hundreds of homes, it's because he was laser-like focused. And because everybody knows there's one thing they can count on, that his word is solid. And so he has a track record and his reputation precedes him. That's why he's the number one guy in my mind.
Do you have two or maybe three books that you've recommended to people over the years most often?
Yeah, the two books that I recommend, one is somebody that I follow pretty closely and I listen to him because he really will shake you. And if he doesn't shake you, it means you're probably a little nuts like some of us. And that's Grant Cardone's 10X book. I love that book. I study it. I read it over and over again. And the other book is the book that I wrote called Reinvented Life. And the reason being, it took 10 years of what I did. And I wish I could have read that book when I started, because it would have prevented a $20 million loss. And it would have given me a lot of framework and tools to be able to use that would have prevented me from losing that money and actually making money and sustaining it to where I would have had literally hundreds of thousands, if not millions, in residual income coming in today that I blew up. So that $10 book is worth about 8,000 times what the cost is. So that's the other one that I tend to give out or talk about quite a bit with people.
Do you know who the author is on that one, Damien?
On Reinvented Life?
Yes.
That would be Christopher Ashby and Damien Lupo. It's the book that we wrote 5 years ago.
All right. Do you have, or what would be the crown jewel of wisdom, if you could go back and share that with your younger, maybe 18 or 20-year-old self, what would that be?
The wisdom would be to not harvest the stuff you're planting and give yourself at least a 10-year outlook for the things you're building, and not just focus on the cash, but focus on the things that you're planting that you're going to hold, and do everything you can to make sure you're buying things that are long-term holds the rest of your life, that you're doing that every year. The mistake a lot of people make is they get addicted to the crack cash. I mean, all this cash that's coming in, it kind of goes up their nose. And the reason that I make so many drug references is because it's so easy to be addicted to some of these really bad models. And it's like a bad drug addiction. So the wisdom is, don't sit there, even if you're buying rental properties, and harvest all your equity. Don't go there and just flip a bunch of stuff, because you're going to get older and worn out, and you're going to realize, I don't have an asset, I just have a job. And so the wisdom is, go build up an asset base so you truly have freedom. At that point, go do the stuff that you enjoy, or don't do it, but it doesn't matter. You're not going to starve to death.
Build the asset base. Great advice. Damien, if there's anybody who wants to get some more information about maybe the solo 401ks that you set up, or maybe wants to check out your book, Reinvented Life, maybe you have a website or some contact information you could share.
Yeah, definitely. Guys, come over and visit us at totalcontrolfinancial.com. You can get a copy of the book, and there's a report on the solo 401k that you can get, just download it. It's right there. Totalcontrolfinancial.com is going to have a lot of resources, and you're going to see what it's all about. So you can do your own research and make sure it works for you. And I think you're going to realize pretty quickly that this is a lot, well, 10 times better than anything that you have heard of before. So just come visit the website, and you'll have lots of resources and things you can grab immediately.
I know I'll be checking it out. I really appreciate you taking your time and sharing your wisdom, sharing the information on the 401k, and even you know, a lot of life stuff we talked about, some of the ups and downs that I'm sure a lot of people have dealt with or will deal with at some point in the future. So, Damien, I really appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you.
Dan, I appreciate the time. I appreciate the work you're doing, educating and empowering people. Man, it's been a pleasure. I really appreciate the time.
And thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamond Show. Are you interested in receiving an email notification when the next episode is released? You can either sign up at www.reidiamonds.com, and I will send you my business plan / ebook titled How to Become a Wholesale Real Estate Master for Doing So, or you can subscribe through one of the podcasting apps, including iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. If you are interested in selling a deal to me, I am interested in buying a deal from you. You can go to www.reidiamonds.com to submit a deal by clicking the link at the top of the page. You can also reply to the email if you received emails from me with the deal details, and I'll check them out. I am currently buying properties, deals, single-family houses, profitable real estate in the Philadelphia tri-state area. I specifically love South Philadelphia. I love the Kensington area just northeast of Fishtown. If you have any deals there, definitely hit me up. I am buying in the Baltimore, D.C. area. I am also buying in the Chicagoland region. Specifically, I like East Humboldt Park, if anybody has any deals there. In the Atlanta region, I am buying Beltline properties to hold for the long term. I love the Atlanta Beltline. I love what's happening in the Atlanta region. So if you have any properties for sale along the Beltline route, please reach out either at my website or through email. And I am also buying in the Tampa Bay area in Florida. And last but not least, if you know anybody else who might also enjoy learning about the solo 401k, I think you'd want to send them this episode. I would really appreciate the referral, and I'm sure they would love to know about the solo 401k. So finally, I appreciate you tuning in to this episode of the REI Diamond Show. Dan Breslin here. I'll catch you on the next one.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.